You've spoken and we've heard you loud and clear. We're proud to announce our brand new ACLJ Life and Liberty Drive. Our legal teams will be focusing on the issues that you've told us matter the most to you, life and religious liberty. We're redoubling our efforts to beat back the radical left's attacks on your constitutional religious freedoms and to defend the sanctity of human life. This is your moment to get in the fight. Every tax-deductible gift will be doubled. Go to ACLJ.org right now and join us in the fight.
Welcome to the Todd Starn Show, sponsored by Legacy Precious Metals. There's never been a better time to invest in precious metals. Visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
All right. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes radio program. So happy to have you with us. Just a few seconds ago, a little breaking news on the program. We had Senator Colton Moore, a state senator from Georgia, and he is now calling for the governor to declare a special session of the state legislature where they can, if nothing else, defund the district attorney's office there in the state of Georgia. So developments are happening. We're going to be taking your calls today. Do you believe that state lawmakers in Georgia should defund the district attorney's office in Fulton County? By the way, both the House and the Senate are controlled by Republicans. They just need a simple majority. And if they can do that, at least they will not have the money to go after the president in what many people are calling a political witch hunt. Now, we're also getting some breaking news. Speaker Newt Gingrich was on Charlie Kirk's program just a few moments ago. And he tells Charlie Kirk, Speaker Newt says that there's a lot more to this. Now, I want to go back to Monday. We were not anticipating the announcement coming, right? Something had happened. There was somebody leaked a document, the charging document. That document was then immediately removed from the website of the clerk's office. The clerk now says, oops, that was just a mistake. The DA's office said it was fake, but when the actual indictment was handed down, it was word for word the very same document. We also knew that something got speeded up very quickly. There were witnesses that were scheduled for later in the week. Those individuals were told they had to testify immediately. And so Newt Gingrich is now alleging that someone from Washington, D.C. called Fannie Willis and demanded that she indict Trump on Monday to cover up for the Weiss screw-up. Take a listen.
That I am told, this is hearsay, but I am told by a reliable source, that Friday evening somebody from Washington called the district attorney in Atlanta and said, you have to indict on Monday. We have to cover up all of the mistakes we just made with Weiss. And she said, apparently, my jurors aren't coming back till Tuesday. And they said, you didn't hear me. You have to indict on Monday. And she said, well, they're not going to get here before noon. They said, it doesn't matter. She said, this means it's going to be 8 or 9 or 10 o'clock at night. They said, it doesn't matter. We need the news
so
media shifting.
Who made that phone call?
We don't know. And I'm telling you up front, this is hearsay, but it's from a person who has remarkably good sources.
I totally believe it, though, because that would explain why they leaked and they messed up on the clerk document, why she was exhausted, and why they had the 11 p.m. press conference, Mr. Speaker.
That explains everything. I mean, it explains why the indictment was published early, because it was a rush job. That this was somebody very high up in Washington was ordering this to go down. Now, look, Speaker Newt has pretty impeccable sources, and it's certainly believable if it all sort of makes sense now when you put all the puzzle pieces together that the fix was in here. So, look, we're going to stay on top of this. This is breaking news, and I have no doubt that there will be more to this story. So we're going to keep you posted on how all of this breaks out. In the meantime, there is some brand new polling out there, and it is just not looking good for Ron DeSantis. And the latest polling data shows that that he is failing, that what his campaign is doing is not working. So the question is, what does DeSantis need to do here? Is it time for DeSantis to pull out? Is it time for him to fire his campaign staff again? What needs to happen? By the way, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie now surpassing Ron DeSantis in New Hampshire's poll. The national polls not looking good for DeSantis either. He is now in third place behind Vivek Ramaswamy, and his campaign, according to a memorandum obtained by the New York Times, his campaign is saying that DeSantis is going to have to hammer Ramaswamy at the debate next week. Did you ever imagine that Ron DeSantis would be fighting for his political life against a newcomer, a novice to the political world? It's really just unbelievable. By the way, this is coming from Newsmax. There is a new RMG poll. This was just published, I would say about 2 hours ago. The RMG research poll shows President Trump crushing the GOP primary field. I mean crushing. Trump drew 60% in 60% support, with Vivek Ramaswamy at 13% and Ron DeSantis with 8% coming in third place. 47-point lead on Ramaswamy. Trump has 52-point lead on DeSantis, one of his largest. And DeSantis has never had poll numbers this low. Want to go through these poll numbers? Not terribly surprising, aside from the fact that DeSantis is dropping here. Trump 60%, Ramaswamy 13, DeSantis 8. Chris Christie 5, Pence 4, Nikki Haley 4, and Tim Scott at 2%, which I am very surprised because Tim Scott is a pretty effective campaigner. But I think the issue here is very simple. People want Trump, and they're not changing their minds. The results show Ramaswamy is now surging across America, DeSantis losing support. Now, this is interesting. Ramaswamy is up 10 points from June. So we'll see how he fares moving forward. But Ramaswamy is doing a pretty terrific job. And you know the one thing Ramaswamy is not doing right now? He is not attacking Donald Trump. You know what he is doing? He is defending Donald Trump by name. And right now it's paying off. So good for you, Vivek Ramaswamy. And by the way, Team DeSantis knows this because the memorandum says that DeSantis needs to go out there and attack Ramaswamy and defend Donald Trump. Something that to this date, DeSantis has not done. And it's hurting him. It is absolutely hurting him. All right, 844-747-8868 is our phone number today. That's 844-747-8868. We'll be right back.
Don't miss the most inspirational movie of the summer, Briarcliff Entertainment's The Hill, starring Dennis Quaid in theaters Friday, August 25th. It's the true life story of professional baseball player Ricky Hill. Growing up poor in a small Texas town, young Ricky discovers an extraordinary ability for hitting a baseball. But with leg braces and a degenerative spinal disease, the major leagues were just a dream that could never be. Courageously, he risks it all, defying his father's wish to follow in his footsteps to become a pastor. Ricky tries out for a major league scout, pushing hard to overcome his disability. He goes on to become a baseball phenomenon. Some dreams are unbreakable. The Hill, starring Dennis Quaid, Colin Ford, and Scott Glenn. The true inspirational story about family, faith, and a baseball miracle. Don't miss The Hill, rated PG, in theaters Friday, August 25th. Get your tickets now.
Hey, welcome into it. It is the Todd Starnes radio program. Andy Hoosier filling in for the great Todd Starnes today. Hey, we're at it, baby. We're ready to go. It is a Tuesday, and we have a lot to talk about today as we get this ball rolling. It's great to be back in the saddle with you as Todd Starnes out and about traveling, and it's always fun to be able to fill in. We appreciate Todd giving us the opportunity to do so all the time, and welcome into it as the Liberty University Studios moving on out to Wichita, Kansas, as we hail in the center of the country. Welcome into the program, and it's going to be a fun one today for sure. 844-747-8868 if you want to jump on the program. Would love to hear from you. Bottom of this hour here in just a few minutes, we're going to be talking with an individual who has his predictions for the upcoming 2024 presidential election, not on the Republican side, but on the side of the Democrats, of Joe Biden, of the potential nominee from the Democrat side, which he says will be Michelle Obama. Joe Gilbert, author of Michelle Obama 2024, Her Real Life Story and Plan for Power, will be joining us coming up here in just a few minutes. We'll talk about the other side, because now all attention's on the Republican side with the debate coming up tomorrow, which I want to get into in just a moment. But the other side right now, even though Joe Biden says that he's up in the polls pretty dramatically, which makes sense because it's a unified party and they don't like to step out of line for the most part, the question is, will we be able to tear them down, and will Joe Biden still be the president by this time next year going into the general election, or will Operation Joe Biden accidentally fall down the stairs while trying to tie his shoe finally commence, which I thought honestly would have happened like 3 years ago or something. So we'll get Joe on the program here in just a little bit. But obviously the big news today is the debate that's tomorrow, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, with eight Republican candidates getting on the stage. It includes Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, former Vice President Mike Pence, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, Vivek Ramaswamy, the entrepreneur, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, and former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson stepping on that stage. Obviously, the big name that is not on that list includes former President Donald Trump, as he is set to potentially, at least the last I've heard, do a live video interview, a live stream with none other than Tucker Carlson. Is that true? And my question for you today is, should Donald Trump be on that stage tomorrow in Milwaukee, Wisconsin? According to the latest national polls, near 75% of voters say that Donald Trump should be on that stage. And this may be kind of unpopular, but I have to agree. I think that Donald Trump should be there. I think Donald Trump should be there to show a little bit of unity for the party. Now, when I say unity for the party, I have to clarify and explain here, because right now there's not a lot of unity within the Republican Party, but nonetheless, there should be. As of right now, the way things usually are, and for those that know me in any way, shape, or form, which many of you don't, is relatively new to the Todd Starnes airwaves here, but I am a huge proponent for party over person in the general election. And because it's party over person in the general election, that means the primary election is probably one of the most important elections that we can possibly have. And it is the day and the time for us to spar, to challenge each other, to further and progress our conservative views. And the way we do that is through competition. The way we do that is through being able to challenge one another on a debate stage. Now, that being said, there's an argument to be made for Donald Trump not attending, and as he's been trying to do, is unify the Republican Party behind him as a former president of the United States. There's an argument to be made that Donald Trump should not need to debate, nor should there be as many Republican candidates as there are in the field right now, specifically because he is essentially the face of the party. He is essentially the front runner for the Republican Party in a wide stretch right now. We're still seeing 40, 50 points in the polls above any other candidate on the Republican side. So Donald Trump's kind of dominating things still right now. So there is an argument to be made for the rest of them to clear out and to show a unification of a Republican Party behind a former president of the United States who actually has experience in the White House and who could potentially do the same thing again moving forward. But that doesn't seem to be the case. And as you know anything about the history of the Republican Party, that's not quite our style. We don't usually like to unite behind one person. We like to beat each other up, and usually beat each other up worse than what we would with a Democrat on the other side in a general election. We're really good at harming ourselves more so and holding ourselves to a higher standard than we are holding the other side of the aisle to a higher standard. So I'm curious, in the upcoming debate, is it harmful do you think for Donald Trump to not be on that debate stage, as he instead says that he doesn't want to deal with them? I think his words were that they don't deserve to debate him, that he should be that unified voice, and that he's not going to debate, at least for this one. And we'll see what it looks like moving forward as we continue to narrow down this field, as there's 15 candidates total in the race for the Republican side, 8 of them on the debate stage tomorrow, and the front runner not actually being there. I think it's a cause for concern, because even though the media doesn't quite like Donald Trump, even though Fox News doesn't quite like Donald Trump, even though the agenda of the debate would be unfortunately focused largely on the indictments of Donald Trump and why he's still running with the indictments and what he's going to do to stop the indictments and how he's going to fight the indictments. You know that's going to be the entire argument during the debate stage if he were there. We know it, and we don't want to hear that, which is why Donald Trump conveniently had that meeting with Fox executives just a couple weeks ago to see what the debate would actually look like if he were to show up and see if they could come to an agreement. And it sounds like, obviously, they weren't able to do so. But if he were there, at least in my humble opinion, it would show a bit of a sign of unity, and it would show that the Republicans, even though some of them are there to specifically try to attack and knock Donald Trump off a few pegs, that it wouldn't work and that we're a unified party. What's interesting about this argument is that Donald Trump, if you've noticed, has not used the same campaign team that he had in 2016 when he dominated that race against Hillary Clinton. We don't see individuals like Corey Lewandowski. We don't see people like David Bossie. We don't hear some of the same names that we heard during the first election. And I have to give credit to Donald Trump and his entire team at that time that he was very, very efficient in that election, because being a businessman, not having been involved in politics, he ran his campaign like a business. And working with outsiders was pretty effective, honestly, as he tried to run for that. Now, we're not seeing that. And the weird part about this entire discussion is that right now, we're seeing Donald Trump try to use more of the RNC in his campaign, using more establishment Republicans, and not necessarily establishment as in Rhino, but more mainstream Republicans within the political system running his campaign this time, because he's trying to find a way to work closer with the Republican Party. He's doing that at the same time that he says he doesn't want to debate Republicans in the presidential field with a quote-unquote, and I use this as air quotes for the radio listeners here, the quote-unquote Republican conservative news outlets, which, as you know, they're not quite at that level anymore like what they used to be, but they try to still hype themselves up to be the quote-unquote Republican news outlet in the mainstream. And as he's trying to work closer to win over the Republicans, he's not doing a good job by, in my opinion, again, ostracizing himself by not stepping up into that debate stage. Do you agree or disagree? Would you like to see Donald Trump actually debate in this one, or to step aside and say, hey, these guys are so far behind, they're not worthy of it, they're not worth the time. Donald Trump, we already know what he stands for, we know what he's trying to do, we know what he's working on, we don't need him to get beat down any further by any moderators or by the other candidates, even though you know that's what's going to happen, and he just doesn't need to show up. 844-747-8868, on the Democrat side, the Biden administration has released some news saying that they are expecting the Republican debate to look like candidates trying to, quote, out MAGA each other, which is hilarious. I mean, if that's the direction we're going, then cool. Let's see how far we can go down this road. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. In fact, I think they're going to go the opposite direction and try and distance themselves from Donald Trump. At least most of them are. You know Mike Pence is. You know Chris Christie is. You know some of the other guys might try to distance themselves, try to be that unique brand. The only ones that I could see potentially trying to MAGA themselves, if that's the term you want to use in this discussion, would be someone like Vivek Ramaswamy, who's been very open in supporting Donald Trump, saying when Donald Trump, if you remember, was down in Miami for his court hearing and for that indictment, that Vivek Ramaswamy was down there as well, which of course was a PR stunt. Of course it is. That's what politics is. Welcome to it. But he was down there holding a rally saying that if he were president, that he would pardon President Donald Trump when he got into office. And he not only was doing it, but he was also encouraging the other Republican candidates to do so as well. He might be the only one trying to use the populist conservative movement to hype up his campaign and piggyback on the movement from Donald Trump. the rest of them, I don't see them really going after the whole MAGA movement. I see them trying to attack it, not try to join it. I see them trying to distance themselves from it. It'll be interesting to see what we see tomorrow on that debate stage. We'll get your thoughts on that here right around the corner. Plus, Joel Gilbert, he'll be joining us after the break. It is the Todd Starnes radio program. Andy Hoosier filling in. Lots more to get to. Stay here.
MyPillow is celebrating its 20-year anniversary with over 80 million MyPillows sold. Mike Lindell at MyPillow wants to thank each and every one of you by giving you the lowest price in the history of MyPillow. You're going to get their queen-size MyPillow for $19.98, regular price $69.98, and just $10 more, you're going to be able to get a king-size pillow. You're going to receive deep discounts on all MyPillow products like bed sheets, mattress toppers, pet beds, mattresses, my slippers, and so much more. This is the time to try out some of their other amazing products you've had your eye on. Go to MyPillow.com/Starnes. That's MyPillow.com/Starnes. Use the promo code Starnes to get this amazing offer of the queen-size MyPillow for $19.98 or call 1-800-839-8506. The offer comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. That's MyPillow.com/Starnes. Use the promo code Starnes or call 800-839-8506, promo code Starnes.
Welcome into it. It is the Todd Starnes radio program. Thanks for hanging out with us today on a post-Monday celebration, as I like to say. Andy Hoosier filling in for the great Todd Starnes as he's out and about. By the way, we got to give credit to the great mighty 990 KWAM, his home flagship station there in Tennessee, as they have won. And the reason he's out, he's traveling right now, as the station won the best local breaking news coverage for the state of Tennessee, their market. So that's amazing. Congrats, guys. You guys rock it with the mighty 990 on KWAM there in Memphis's flagship. I'm hailing out of Wichita, Kansas, where the Liberty University studios have moved it temporarily for the day today as he's out and traveling. And it's so good to have you along with us today. 844-747-8868 if you want to join into the Todd Starnes radio program. Want to shift gears a little bit, though, as we have the debate tomorrow for the Republican side that we'll get back into. I still want to hear your thoughts whether Donald Trump should be attending that or not. I think I have a little bit different take on it than some, although according to the national poll, 75% of voters say they want Donald Trump to be partaking in that as well. That might be a liberal media one just trying to demonize him for not showing up, or that could be the people that just actually want to hear Donald Trump. And he says he's going to be going to Tucker Carlson and doing a video or doing some type of interview there and trying to pull away from them as an alternative. I don't know if that's going to work. I'm curious on what the ratings will look like, because I will personally watch the debate, then go back and watch the replay of Donald Trump's interview from Tucker Carlson. So I have a lot of watching to do. I might as well pop the popcorn and get ready for that one. But it's going to be a interesting Wednesday and see where people end up turning their attention. Moving to the Democrat side, though, Joe Biden still has a, I guess you could call a dominant lead. There's only two technical candidates in the race right now outside of Joe Biden, which is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., which, let's be honest, for a Democrat is the most rational and reasonable, and maybe, my fingers crossed, could actually rebrand the Democrat Party and bring them back to some commonsensical conversation, which is why he's being demonized by the mainstream media and the Democrats right now. The other one, Marianne Williamson, which is just entertaining to watch because she's an interesting individual nonetheless, but those are the only two. Now, historically, if you have an incumbent that's running for re-election, you don't have a primary, you don't have a debate, you don't have challengers, you pretty much unite behind the incumbent and you continue on because they're kind of the face of the party. It's kind of hard to do that, though, when you're waiting for Operation Joe Biden trip down the stairs while trying to tie his shoe, because they've been waiting for that one for a long time, and they were going to do it, in my opinion, early on in the administration, and then realized how unpopular and unfavorable someone like Kamala Harris is as the VP, which is why they're trying to do a rebranding PR stunt with her, and it's just not quite working. So the future of the Democrat Party, the face of the Democrat Party, is going to be interesting to see how they move forward. Happy to have on the program, as I've talked to him a few times on my program, and it's been a while, and the curiosity is, has anything changed, or has it gained momentum? As he is author of the book Michelle Obama 2024, her real-life story and plan for power. He's also director of the documentary of Michelle Obama 2024. It's Joel Gilbert on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker Hotline. Joel, how are you, my friend?
Okay, good to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, it's good to have you on the program. With us finally moving forward and presidential discussions starting to heat up across the nation, I know all eyes are on the 15 Republican candidates right now and the Donald Trump having 30, 40, 50-point leads over all of them. But the Democrats have been pretty quiet right now, and we still hear the rumors and the tweets that Joe Biden will not be the nominee going into 2024. Do you still think that it's going to be Michelle Obama rising to the top by the end of the day?
I do, because Joe Biden is not a viable candidate. There's complete agreement on all sides of the spectrum in politics and media that Biden will not be running again for many reasons. His infirmity, the suspicion of dementia, the fact that he's over 80, the fact that the House is investigating him for bribery, he'll probably be impeached. There's a number of reasons why he's not viable. And RFK Jr. really is more of a libertarian now. He's not really doesn't fit in the Democrat Party, which is a radical socialist party. I think Biden released his little 3-minute video back in April just to kind of put the quash on it so no one else would join the race and to signal the Democrats not to deal with RFK Jr. Biden doesn't have a campaign office. He's not campaigning. He's not doing anything. And I think it's clear that Michelle Obama is the favorite among Democrats. She's been for a long time. The Democrats love the Obamas and want them back in the White House. Michelle's the most popular person in the country, literally. And in my film and book, I track how Michelle has been pretty much copying Barack Obama's path to the White House. Barack had a voter registration organization called Project Vote in Chicago before he ran for president. Michelle started a voter registration organization called When We All Vote. She's backed by Soros for millions of dollars. Barack was the keynote speaker. He introduced John Kerry at the 2004 Democrat convention. Sure enough, there was Michelle Obama introducing Joe Biden at the 2020 Democrat convention. And Barack wrote two autobiographies. He based his candidacy on his personal story before he ran for president, Dreams from My Father and The Audacity of Hope. Sure enough, Michelle wrote two autobiographies, Becoming and The Light We Carry, also both on Netflix as films. And I think the Democrat Party has set it up for Michelle. They moved the first primary out of Iowa, where she'd have to campaign in 99 counties, to South Carolina, where half the Democrat Party voter electorate are African-American. It's also a state that Michelle claims is her adopted home state because her grandparents are from South Carolina. And they put the Democrat National Convention in Chicago, of all places, for a homegirl, you know, convention. So I think it's going to happen in November, I'm predicting. Biden will drop out for health reasons, and the party will turn to Michelle, who's positioned herself for that moment. She's the only Democrat that can raise $100 million in 2 weeks and get all the signatures she needs in 2 weeks.
That is interesting. It makes sense. I mean, it seems like the stars have aligned, and it seems like it's going to happen sooner than I anticipated. If they're waiting for kind of the shock and awe, you would think they would wait till maybe springtime of February, March, April to go into it. You build up the intensity, you peak with your excitement and your popularity going right into early primary season.
The reason I say November is because December 23rd is the deadline for most states to get on their Democrat Party primary ballots. You have to submit signatures by December 23rd. Now, October, there's a date for Nevada, but it's a small state. Most states require December 23rd to submit your signatures. So that's why I think in November we'll see all this go down, and you'll see Michelle on the ballot for all the primary states.
Wow, it makes sense. I mean, it looks like the stars have aligned. I mean, the weird part is right now the Biden administration has announced that this week, ironically during the Republican presidential debates, that they're dumping in $25 million in campaign ads in many of the swing states, including Wisconsin, where they're at for the debate, Michigan, Arizona, Pennsylvania, some of these areas where they're dumping in some really big campaign ads. Why do you think that is? Is it just because if he is on the way out, he's got to spend some of those campaign funds? Is it just trying to boost his poll ratings a little bit to see if he's even viable to try and stay in? What do you think the reasoning is here?
I think Biden is been under a lot of pressure. The fact that he has no campaign office and physically can't really campaign anywhere. I mean, 40% of his presidency has been on vacation in Delaware on the beach. So he doesn't really have the stamina to have a normal campaign and run around the country. And I think in the last couple months, everyone has pointed that out. You're not campaigning. You have no campaign office. You're hardly the president. You're on vacation almost half the time. So I think he's been under pressure to kind of fake it for a little while longer. We're still in the middle of August, and the voices have gotten so loud that Biden is not a viable candidate, I think the people around him are trying to make it look like, well, maybe he's still interested, and that's what's going on.
That is interesting. We're talking with Joel Gilbert, author of the book Michelle Obama 2024, her real life story and plan for power. You can also see the documentary at Michelle Obama 2024, all of it online at MichelleObama24.com. No, that's not a campaign website for Michelle Obama. MichelleObama24.com breaks it all down with the reasonings of why she'll be jumping in here relatively soon. The other only viable candidate right now, Joel, that they've even mentioned that's gained some traction, and I think he's really wanting to do it, is, of course, Gavin Newsom coming out of California, where he went on the interview with Fox News. He's taken some shots and run even campaign ads in other states, just taking jabs at some Republicans. Is he another one that you think will jump in and compete against Michelle for this?
Yeah, I live in California. I can tell you that Gavin Newsom is a very ineffective and poor governor. He's gotten very poor results in California. He's kind of a weird, snarky kind of guy. He doesn't really relate to anybody. He's not very relatable. And don't forget the Democrat Party, because Donald Trump made so many inroads in minority, black, Hispanic communities and got so many votes and so much support from them because he did a lot for them, something Barack Obama never did. And he brought, prison reform, he brought a great economy, jobs, you name it, school choice. So Democrats were desperate to make sure that they keep the minority vote in their in their column. So they started appointing all these positions to black and minority candidates, like the UN ambassador is a black lady. We've got the minority leader in the House, the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, press secretary, you name it. So they've come to the black voters with this rather insulting, condescending idea that says, hey, we look like you, you should vote for us. So the white male candidates no longer fit the Democrat Party. They got rid of Andrew Cuomo. Anyone who's a white male is on the way out if you're a Democrat. So Michelle just checks all the boxes. I think Gavin Newsom's positioning himself really for a vice presidential nod under Michelle Obama, similar to Donald Trump. Because he had no executive experience, they paired him up with Mike Pence, who was a governor of a state of Indiana. So I think the governor of California would make a perfect fit for a Michelle Obama candidacy.
Yeah, that makes a great point. Now, Michelle, I know, has, let's talk about her and obviously your book and your documentary talking about her real life story and her background. I know this doesn't really matter much for Democrats who think she's super awesome and the best person on the face of the earth, but what are her actual qualifications to try and run for president, and does that even matter in today's time?
Well, look, yeah, Michelle will say, she'll say, look, I navigated the White House for 8 years. I was an executive in Chicago. I met 100 world leaders. You know, I ran the White House. She's going to say all these things. And remember, nostalgia, remember how much you love the Obama years. We didn't have any scandals. She's already said that in her interviews with Oprah. So Michelle can easily make the case just based on her popularity that, she could be president. She's a very good speaker. She's a better politician than Barack. She's a better, comes across more authentic. Now, her vulnerabilities, though, are her terrible relationship with the black community in Chicago. And that's why she's been trying to fake it for many years, telling these fake stories of suffering racial discrimination growing up in Chicago, telling a fake story that her high school guidance counselor racially profiled her because she applied to Princeton, which I found out wasn't true. Her guidance counselor was a church-going black woman. And so Michelle tries to appear to be one of these ordinary black folks, I'm just like one of you, to get that very important constituent group to vote for her. But Michelle has a terrible relationship with the black community. She grew up in Chicago. Her and her brother, they were doing white flight. They were running away from the black community for elementary school and high school. They went, instead of going one block from their house to study in black, all black schools that were good schools, she went an hour and a half away. So did her brother, went to a Catholic school to study with whites. Michelle would get beaten up by her neighbors for acting white. They called her, she was acting white and talking white. She didn't have any black friends. She had an attitude. And she even got in a fist fight. She wrote in her book, this girl called her an Oreo, meaning you're black on the outside, but you're really white on the inside. It's a major insult. So Michelle lived in fear of black people. She even says that. It's in my movie. I caught her on tape saying she was afraid to go out of her house. And then as a professional in Chicago, Michelle got her revenge on the black community by working for white liberals to deal with their problems with black people. She made 20,000 blacks homeless working for the mayor of Chicago at Cabrini Green. She destroyed and knocked down the projects near downtown because the Democrat donor developers like Tony Resco wanted the land to build housing for rich people. And then Michelle, having proven how callous she was, she worked for the University of Chicago Medical Center, and they were losing money because Southsiders were coming up and using their emergency room. Some of them didn't have insurance. So Michelle's job was to kick them out of the emergency room. If you were black and showed up, Michelle would put you in a white van and ship you back to the South Side and dump you at these crappy clinics on these strip malls. And that was called patient dumping. It was illegal. But Michelle made millions of dollars exploiting the black community. She has a terrible relationship with them. She married a biracial man. She moved to Hyde Park. She lives in Martha's Vineyard. She has nothing in common with the black community in America, and that's her biggest vulnerability. I think black voters are no fools, and if they came out to understand that Michelle really is an Oreo, they would not support the Obamas politically.
Very interesting. It is Joel Gilbert, the author of the book Michelle Obama 2024, Her Real Life Story and Plan for Power. Also, you can check out the documentary Michelle Obama 2024, all of it on the website at MichelleObama24.com. We got just about a minute left here, Joel, but last question for you. Let's say that she does become the nominee. Obviously, she gets the momentum. She builds upon that. She just rolls into the general election. And let's say it comes down to a Trump and Michelle candidacy. Donald Trump worked very hard trying to reach out to the black communities across the country and saying, hey, you voted Democrat 50, 60 years and you haven't gone anywhere. Why don't you try something different? The Republican Party finally starting to reach and dabble into that community. And if she is unpopular among that crowd, do you think that would change the tide? And would that be a close race, do you think?
I think it could. You know, a good 10-15% of the voters are African-American, and they vote overwhelmingly Democrat. And Donald Trump has a proven track record of delivering for the black community, something that the Obamas never did, the Democrats didn't do for 50, 60 years. I think all he has to do is say, Michelle Obama, how much money did you make denying access to black people to their health care? Michelle, are you going to apologize for what you did to the black community in Chicago for money? And I think that would open up the discussion. And by the way, you can see the movie live stream on salemnow.com or Amazon Prime Video, and then the book version is on amazon.com.
Go and check it out. Go check out the book. Go check out the documentary. If we are going to see a Michelle Obama candidacy in the Democrat side for 2024, we need to know what we're up against. And you got to check it out, the book and the documentary. Again, all of it you can find on the online at MichelleObama24.com. Joel, we appreciate the time very much, my friend. Let's get you back on and talk again soon.
Okay, anytime. Thank you.
Hey, appreciate it very much. Got to take a break here, wrapping up this hour of the Todd Starnes radio program. Back right after this.
Attention, your withdrawal has been denied by the U.S. government.
Picture a world where your every purchase is monitored, tracked, and controlled by those in power to suppress the freedoms of those they see fit. Hi, my name is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and New York Times bestselling author. And right now, I've become very focused on the impending rollout of the central bank digital currency. This is not a work of fiction. It's a terrifying reality looming on the horizon. But there is a bit of good news. I've partnered with Advantage Gold to offer you a solution. They are specialists in converting your traditional assets, like those inside an IRA or 401k, into tangible assets such as physical gold and silver. Don't allow your money to be controlled. Claim your free gold protection kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Welcome back into it. It is the Todd Starnes radio program. Andy Hoosier filling in for the great Todd Starnes today on a post-Monday celebration. Thanks again to Joe Gilbert coming on the program. Interesting information. Could you imagine a, what would it be, fourth term for the Obamas? I mean, let's be honest. We had the two under Barack Obama. We have the one now where it's technically Joe Biden, but we know who's pulling the strings behind the scenes because, I mean, Joe Biden can't even remember his name half the time. So we got to remember who's really running the show right now as well. Then we go into a Michelle Obama presidential candidacy of 2024 where she would be dominating. And look, like Joel said, it's a great point. She would be in a very popular candidate on the Democrat side. They do not look at qualifications because if they did, then Joe Biden would not be president right now from the Democrat side either. So sorry. No, that would be not so much. Not so much. So if she jumped into the race, they look at the personality. They look at the celebrity status. They look at the cool hipster look that the Obamas have, and she would be able to dominate that. The question is, would it be enough to topple someone, let's just say theoretically, that Donald Trump got the nomination for the presidential race, which right now it looks like it with near 75% support from the Republican Party. But if it came down to a Trump-Obama race, Donald Trump already knocked off the Clintons, knocked off the machine man. Now, obviously, he was the underdog and no one expected it, so he had the element of surprise, so to speak. But would he be able to topple off an Obama run with everybody gunning for him and with the Obamas still trying to make things happen from, again, behind the scenes? That would be an interesting race for 2024, and I would be excited and nervous all at the same time, because let's be honest, that is a little nerve-wracking with the Obamas still in action, trying to run what's going on in Washington, D.C. We got so much to cover right around the corner for hour number two of the Todd Starnes radio program. Stay here.
Attention, your withdrawal has been denied by the U.S. government.
Picture a world where your every purchase is monitored, tracked, and controlled by those in power to suppress the freedoms of those they see fit. Hi, my name is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and New York Times bestselling author. And right now, I've become very focused on the impending rollout of the central bank digital currency. This is not a work of fiction. It's a terrifying reality looming on the horizon. But there is a bit of good news. I've partnered with Advantage Gold to offer you a solution. They are specialists in converting your traditional assets, like those inside an IRA or 401k, into tangible assets such as physical gold and silver. Don't allow your money to be controlled. Claim your free gold protection kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, indeed it is. What's up? It is the Todd Starnes radio program. Hour number two of the Todd Starnes radio program. Andy Hoosier filling in for the great Todd Starnes today. He is out and about traveling. In fact, he's, you know, going to get an award because he's so awesome. His hat tip to the great, mighty 990 KWAM out of Memphis there, the home flagship station for Todd Starnes as he is out. And the radio station as a whole won the Best Local Breaking News Coverage Award for the state of Tennessee. So that's awesome. Congrats, guys. You guys rock it out there in Tennessee. And he's, you know, got to go accept an award. I want to see it. I want to see like a Grammy Award winning acceptance speeches. I want to thank everybody. Thank my family. Thanks my friends. Because it's going to be awesome, and they well deserve it. So hat tip, guys. That's awesome. Andy Hoosier filling in today as we are moving the Liberty University studios out to Wichita, Kansas for the day, as we have a lot to cover. Had a great conversation with Joel Gilbert last hour. This hour, we're going to shift gears as Congress is set to head back into Washington, D.C. for their fall session here after Labor Day. So a couple weeks yet before they head back up, and some big items on the ticket. We have our federal budget that doesn't seem like it's going to be very budgety come the end of September. For those that don't know, the federal budget ends at the end of September. By fourth quarter of our calendar year begins the first quarter of the fiscal budget year, and I don't think that they're going to get it done. Also, the farm bill, which some may know about, some may not know about. We'll talk about that some a little bit here later on as well. But coming up bottom of this hour, we have Congressman Ron Estes. He is my congressman here in the 4th District of Kansas, and he's also on the Ways and Means Committee to talk about the budgetary process, taxes, the economy, and a heck of a lot more. So we'll get to that in just a bit. The open lines are still there, though, for you at 844-747-8868, 844-747-8868. The question still stands from last hour is, do you believe Donald Trump needs to debate in tomorrow's debate in the Republican primary? The first Republican debate in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, there are 15 candidates total in the race. There are eight of them that are on the debate stage tomorrow. Donald Trump, who's up 30, 40, 50 points above all the other candidates, not attending that one, instead doing an interview with Tucker Carlson, causing a lot of controversy. I've made my opinion where I believe he needs to debate. Now, while I am a fan of Donald Trump, and I think that there is an argument to be made that Republicans do a very, very poor job of uniting, which is what we always wish we could do, as well as Democrats, uniting behind a candidate, uniting behind a singular idea, which is limited government, free market, laissez-faire, capitalist ideals, individual sovereignty, state sovereignty. You know, I wish we could unite behind these things and actually have a very clear and definitive agenda as a Republican Party. We seem to struggle a little bit with that. And in fact, we beat ourselves up more than what we normally need to. And there is an argument to be made for the Republicans to say there's way too many candidates. We need to minimize them out, weed them out a little bit. And we need to unite behind the front runner, which is right now Donald Trump. Even after four indictments, he's still the front runner and by a wide margin. And instead of having a primary like this, he's already a former president, and we need, as a party, as the RNC together, to unite behind someone like Donald Trump to be able to move forward. I can see an argument like that, in which case would reinforce the idea of I don't need to debate this because we have so much momentum, there's no need for us, and it doesn't do us any good. On the other hand, in my opinion, again, Donald Trump, while he is the face of the party right now, the Republican Party is not one singular person. In my opinion, the Republican Party is not one singular face. And I love primaries. Primaries, to me, are the most important election that we can possibly have. And I want to hear what the other candidates have to say. Maybe not to try and do the mudslinging and attacking like we do oh so well as the Republican Party, but to expand our ideas, to challenge ideas, to try to expand upon certain ideas, and for us to show unity in a healthy manner. Do you agree, disagree? 844-747-8868. There's arguments to be made on either side of it. Again, I will be watching the debate, and then I will watch the Donald Trump interview with Tucker Carlson after the debate tomorrow. Let's go to the phones here, shall we? And let's go to Charles on WSIC in North Carolina. Charles, how are you, my friend?
Hey, Andy. Thanks. Appreciate you taking my call.
Yeah.
Andy, I'm of the opinion that I do not believe that Donald Trump should be debating tomorrow night, and I'll tell you why. Aside from him being so far ahead in the polls, I mean, this is like Babe Ruth. This is the major leagues, right? And you're going up against guys that are playing T-ball. And they are so outclassed, and I don't think there's a Republican out there that does not know where Donald Trump stands on the issues. Not only where he stands, but also that he's delivered on the issues. And yeah. I could just see him being on that debate stage and Fox News shaping the questions to attack Donald Trump, have other Republicans attack and focus on Donald Trump, which I think would further divide the party. So yeah. For right now, if I were Trump, I would not show up. I would let these other guys just go up there, and to me, it's going to be kind of be like an audition for the vice president, you know. But honestly, I'm not planning to watch the debate. My mind is made up, and I'm going to vote for Donald Trump, and sure. I intend to watch Tucker Carlson. Yeah.
Very interesting. Let me ask you this, Charles, and I appreciate that, and I see the arguments. It makes a lot of sense because you're right. We know where Donald Trump stands on issues. And I think that's why he had the meeting with the executives with Fox on maybe screening. Hey, if I partake in this, is this all it's going to be about? Is attack me, an indictment, and I said these mean tweets, and I said this or I said that. I don't want that to be, because I want to show unity. To me, it shows a little bit of a lack of unity by not showing up, even though we know someone like Chris Christie is going to say, hey, my entire job is going to be the nasty New Jersey mentality, personality that I have to go after Donald Trump. Personally, I'm not a big fan of Chris Christie, so I see him as kind of a loudmouth, and he's going to go up there and just try and berate Donald Trump, whether he's there or not, which is not going to help the party. But the interesting part to me about this is that Donald Trump's utilizing a lot of the RNC within his campaign. They're trying to show some civility with Donald Trump and the Republican Party, even though I think that relationship is on pins and needles right now in some aspects, because the Republican Party is still not sure whether they want to put for their full force behind him. So he's trying to utilize them to show that, but then not show up to debate. I almost see it would be more unity if he showed up to that, except for, like you said, the fact that if the moderators just focus on trying to find ways to slander him.
Well, about the only – if Trump were to show up for that debate on Wednesday night, the one thing that I would – if I were giving him advice, I would just tell him to make the statement, you know what, guys, this is not a race. This is over. I'm the clear nominee, and I'm the one that Republicans want to be run for president to take on the Democrat. And it's time for all of you just to fold up tent and drop out of the race and unite behind me.
Ooh.
You know,
see, I like that. I like that mentality. If he showed up to that debate, that he could roll in like the Conor McGregor out of UFC and just stroll up and say, "I own this city. Come, just come in and support my vote because there's no one else that's even close. It's not even worth it." And if he came in with that mentality, I think people would have really enjoyed that. But I think that would be the mentality he would have to take in a debate. And I would almost like to see that.
Yeah. I think that would be the only advantage of him showing up. But other than that, I think, like you said, Chris Christie would come out like an attack dog. Yeah. And I think he should sit this one out for now and just let him sort it out and maybe do the next one when the field whittles down.
Mm-hmm. I like that idea. And I think he will. I don't think he's out for all debates, but you're right. I think he is waiting for the field to kind of whittle itself down just a little bit. So I appreciate that, my friend Charles. Great to hear from you. And great points. I agree with everything that you said. Regarding him showing up, not showing up, I still would like to see him to show up, and I would like him to take that. I would like him to make that statement very clear that, hey, I am the head of the party. We're still 40 points ahead of any of you up here on this debate stage. It's time for the Republican Party to unite and to unite behind me because of the attacks that I'm going through, because of how desperate the other side doesn't want me to be in there, and because how I can complete the task. Knowing what it's like in Washington, D.C. and in the White House, I can finish what I set out to start in the first term. Let's go back to it, and let's go to Carol in Jackson, Tennessee. Carol, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. What's on your mind?
I respectfully disagree with you. I do not think Trump needs to show up at the debate. I have heard all the candidates, and I think I don't even want to, I would not even want any of them to be a vice president. I think about three of them have stabbed Trump in the back, and that Oswami talks a good game and mm-hmm. has a lot of good things to say, even about Trump. But he has not shown what he can do in the White House. And Trump has. He's fulfilled yeah. everything. I know what he can do. He does what he says he's going to do. And I think I don't have any confidence in any of them up there. And
sure.
So I don't think he needs to show up. And I think most Trump supporters have already made up their mind. So
that is true. I mean, they're not doing themselves any favors trying to distance themselves. There was, again, the Biden team says that on the debate stage they're going to try to, quote, out-MAGA each other to try and be as much of a bandwagon Trump supporter as possible. I don't know if that's going to be the case because I think some are going to try and distance themselves, like Mike Pence, like Chris Christie. But you're right. I mean, if he is getting support of near 75% of the party, then what do you do with that as another candidate? I mean, you're living under a vast shadow trying to fill a shoe that's not even trying to be filled right now. And you either have to get on board and agree with Trump and try and hope for a VP pick with him, or you have to distance yourself, which is not doing yourself any good. So, Carol, I ask you, if you don't like any of them, do you have an idea on who he should pick as a VP?
Well, I bet Flynn. Was it Colonel Flynn?
Oh, General General Mike Flynn, yeah.
General Flynn, yeah. Yeah, I think he would be a good candidate.
That would be interesting. That would
I've heard his name mentioned from other people, and I think he would be. He's been a staunch supporter of President Trump.
Sure. That would definitely mix it up for sure, I think. So, Carol, I appreciate that very much. I appreciate the phone call. If he chose General Flynn as a VP candidate, I think that would be a very controversial pick because of the reputation that General Flynn has gotten, not within the Republican ranks, because I think most Republicans really love General Flynn as myself. However, I guess it would not cause any more controversy than what Donald Trump already is. Why not? Why not go for it? And he's coming from the state of California, so that might help out with some of the Republicans in California to steer at least a couple of those, if they could split those electoral college votes out of California, moving to his direction as well. It's interesting, and it seems like most people don't want him to debate. I would still like it. I think it's still needed. I think it shows more unity within the Republican Party. Now, again, it's not to try and show if there's another viable candidate that is worthy of taking the reins and holding the torch for the Republican Party instead of Trump. But I think it shows the unity of, you know what, we're all on the debate stage. We're all in this together. We're all Republicans. We're all semi-conservative for the most part. We all have the same vision. Let's find a way to move forward together. And if Trump walked into a debate and said that, and like our previous caller said, that, hey, I am well above and beyond everybody else. I am dominating the polls. You guys shouldn't be up here. We need to whittle down the field. We need to get behind the Republican frontrunner who was a previous president of the United States in order to go in and finish the job. And we work together to fight back the progressives that are trying to dominate me. I think that would completely disassemble any type of argument that the other Republicans have in that field. And I hope that gets brought up. Now, you mentioned Vivek Ramaswamy, which I am vaguely intrigued with as well. And he is kind of a wild card, but so was Donald Trump back in 2016. He was a business guy, an entrepreneur, didn't know what he really stood for. He said a lot of really good stuff, but we didn't know whether he would be able to act upon it or not. Ramaswamy's in that exact same boat, and right now he's taking that second-ranked poll above Ron DeSantis. In fact, he's up by 1 or 2 points in most polls right now over Ron DeSantis. Now, again, there's still a 40-point lead for Trump over Ramaswamy, but he is dominating in the polls compared to the other candidates. And he actually narrows that margin from Trump more so than any of the other candidates right now as well. The wild card of Ramaswamy, however, is a potentially dangerous one because, like Donald Trump, he was a Democrat prior. He wrote numerous books on wealth building, but in some of those books he had mentioned a death tax of near 40%, which obviously conservatives, that kind of perks our ears up a little bit and says, wait a second, maybe that's not a good idea. So there are some concerning aspects to him, but at the same time, again, Donald Trump was a registered Democrat before, too. Donald Trump donated to Democrats before, and look at what he turned out to be, as he turned out to be the beacon of quote-unquote hope for many Republicans on our side for conservatives, as a populist. So we have some interesting candidates. I don't want to knock the other candidates at all, because they have some great ideas, but right now, is it time to kind of morph it and narrow it down and then start talking about how we unite behind a front runner and get ready for a major battle that could potentially be behind another Obama with Michelle going into 2024, if that's the case. 844-747-8868. Would love to hear your thoughts. Agree, disagree? I really want to hear from you right back here on the Todd Starnes radio program.
Attention, your withdrawal has been denied by the U.S. government.
Picture a world where your every purchase is monitored, tracked, and controlled by those in power to suppress the freedoms of those they see fit. Hi, my name is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and New York Times bestselling author. And right now, I've become very focused on the impending rollout of the central bank digital currency. This is not a work of fiction. It's a terrifying reality looming on the horizon. But there is a bit of good news. I've partnered with Advantage Gold to offer you a solution. They are specialists in converting your traditional assets, like those inside an IRA or 401k, into tangible assets such as physical gold and silver. Don't allow your money to be controlled. Claim your free gold protection kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Welcome back into it. Todd Starnes radio program. Andy Hoosier filling in today. Always a pleasure and an honor to be able to do so, to fill in the seats for Todd as he is out and about traveling around. 844-747-8868 is the number if you want to jump on the program. As I may have hit a trigger. Did I trigger some? It's okay. Did I hit the hot button? Let's go right back to the phones here, shall we? Let's go back to North Carolina. Let's go to Rita on the line. Rita, how are you today?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Living the dream, my friend. What's on your mind?
Well, regarding Donald Trump going to the debate, if he goes, I think all of those of us who love him like watching him, whatever he does and whenever he does it. But if I would like him to see him, even though be aggressive, I would like for him to not be insulting or in that sort of fashion and show some grace. So anybody else that gets insulting, like Mr. Christie, it makes them look small in my mind.
Yeah, and I agree, and I think that's a lot of, you're right, that is something that he's had to overcome with a lot of Republicans even throughout the years, even back in 2016, were like, well, yeah, he's got some good ideas, but man, he's nasty on the Tweety, which is why they said, hey, just step away from the Twitter for a little bit, and if he goes up there, I think he would try that, because he does have some fans up there, Vivek Ramaswamy being one of those. On the other hand, like you said, Chris Christie is kind of like the New Yorker coming from New Jersey, so I guess it's close, like Donald Trump, where they get very loud and very passionate. And those two going up there would be like oil and water mixing together. That would not turn out well, and that could, I guess, potentially harm them more than it helps them.
But I think Donald Trump has smoothed out some of those areas in his life and in his speech. And I think if he welcomes them all and says that he is, you know, looking forward to the debate within them all, and that he keeps encouraging the party to unite, that looks good for him. Yeah. And also, as far as a vice president, I think Tulsi Gabbard would be an amazing pick.
Ooh, Tulsi Gabbard. That's an interesting one. Rita, I appreciate the phone call very much, my friend. Have a wonderful, great one. Tulsi would be a very interesting candidate for sure. She is very much about exposing corruption in D.C. She's very much about exposing Democrats and their corruption as well. I disagree with her on a few different policies, as she is still overall a relative Democrat. She did support kind of a universal basic income. She has supported some socialist policies. But overall, I think she would be head over heels against many other candidates as well. So that could be a possibility. Interesting. Appreciate that call. We got some more calls on the line. Don't go anywhere. We'll get to you here in just a minute. Right around the corner, we also have Congressman Ron Estes, my congressman from here in the 4th Congressional District for the great state of Kansas. As we continue on with the Todd Starnes radio program, Andy Hoosier filling in today. We'll be right back.
Attention, your withdrawal has been denied by the U.S. government.
Picture a world where your every purchase is monitored, tracked, and controlled by those in power to suppress the freedoms of those they see fit. Hi, my name is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and New York Times bestselling author. And right now, I've become very focused on the impending rollout of the central bank digital currency. This is not a work of fiction. It's a terrifying reality looming on the horizon. But there is a bit of good news. I've partnered with Advantage Gold to offer you a solution. They are specialists in converting your traditional assets, like those inside an IRA or 401k, into tangible assets such as physical gold and silver. Don't allow your money to be controlled. Claim your free gold protection kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Welcome back into the Todd Starnes radio program. Andy Hoosier filling in for Todd Starnes. Always great to have you along for the ride as we move the Liberty University Studios out here to Wichita, Kansas. And it's always a pleasure to jump on the air with you. I want to get to our next guest. Don't want to waste any time as Congress headed back out to Washington, D.C. here over the next week or so as they begin to trickle in. And we have a lot to discuss as we get back and start off that fall session again as we go to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker Hotlines. Excited to have on the program my congressman from the great 4th Congressional District of the state of Kansas. It's Congressman Ron Estes. Congressman, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Andy?
Oh, it's always good to chat with you, and it's good to have you back on here. I know it's been some time off out of D.C., but it is going to be hit the ground running when you guys return back to Washington here over the next week. Really, it seems like to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like the two biggest items that are on the docket right out of the gate is, of course, the federal budget, with the budget ending at the end of September, and the farm bill that ends around September, October as well. Neither one of those, it looks like, however, will be done at those appropriate times. What's you being on the Ways and Means Committee in the House of Representatives, what's on the docket? What's the latest conversation? And could we actually see a proper federal budget this year?
Yeah, you're right. In terms of priorities, when we get back after Labor Day, it's going to be pretty hectic with things going on for the month of September. And, you know, as you said, September's the end of this fiscal year, so we have to prepare our appropriations, our spending for fiscal year 2024, and we got to get that done in September. And it's one of those things. There's 12 different spending bills that we pass each year to fund the federal government, and they're broken down with different, you know, one of them funds the Agriculture Department, one funds the Defense, and one funds Health and Human Services, and you know, each of the different agencies. And right now, only one of the 12 has passed the House. None of them have passed the Senate. Mm. And so we've got a lot of work to do. One of the things we frequently get into, and I think we do it too often, is we get into what's called a continuing resolution. We can't come to final agreement on all 12 bills for the next fiscal year, so we do a continuing resolution, which basically means we keep spending at the same rate as the current year, and basically kick the can down the road for a few days or a few weeks or even 2 or 3 months while they continue to banter back and forth about what spending ought to be. And my big concern right now, it's two things. One, I don't want to necessarily do continuing resolutions as a normal course of business because you can't plan. I mean, the defense the agencies can't buy spare parts if it takes a longer lead time past the continuing resolution. They can't schedule folks for training. And then the other part that's going to come up in this discussion is just how much should we be spending? Yeah. You know, right now, the federal government this fiscal year is borrowing $1 out of every $5 that it spends.
Wow.
So basically, 20% of the spending is being borrowed. And that's not right. I mean, that's what we're dumping this burden on our kids and grandkids and great-grandkids just to fund the quality of life we want to live today. And we're mortgaging their future forever. And so we've really got to address the spending. And I know that's going to be a hot topic because there's some people that view their role in government as just spending. And we can't continue that vote.
No, we can't continue that trend. And it seems like whenever we have a budget, and obviously after the big bill that we passed back in June that at least allowed us to continue on with the budget until the end of this fiscal year and then beyond, it seems like with whatever we raise the debt ceiling to be, they want to cap it at that. They want to max out the credit card each and every time instead of saying, yeah, we have this up to whatever that spending cap may be, but we want to maybe not spend all of that, have a budget that's a little bit lower, so if an emergency or a disaster or something comes up, then we have a little bit of give room. They don't want to do that. They want to cap it out every single time and say, this is how much that's available. Let's go ahead and push that, and then we always run into, well, we always need more money, so let's go ahead and raise it all over again, and it's the same argument, Congressman. We've seen this since the Obama administration, where we have this continuing resolution till December, and then or else we shut down the government, people die in the streets. Then we get to December, people are trying to get into the holiday mode, trying to enjoy the Christmas and New Year's and everything else at that time. And then again, it's either we do another continuing resolution until January or February, or we just do another omnibus package until the next fiscal year and then start the process all over again. And I think most people are getting pretty frustrated with this process.
It really is. It's frustrating. And, you know, the goal is not to shut down the government, but the goal is let's live within our means. And that's the big piece that doesn't get done. And you've got to do it every year. It's just like your own household budget. You've got to look at yourself every month and what you have as income and what you're spending. And the federal government needs to do that. And instead, people turn a blind eye because it's so much easier to throw more money at a program because somebody asked you to, instead of making the hard choices of saying, this is very beneficial and this is something we ought to spend money for. This is something that we should not borrow from our kids and grandkids just to fund extra money this year and make those tough decisions. And we need to do them every year. We need to get back into a regular thought process of saying, how do we manage and be good fiscal stewards of the taxpayer dollars?
Yeah. It is a long, frustrating process, but hopefully we can see a little bit of gain this year. I know that there have been some Republicans that have sent a letter to Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, saying that they would not go along with just capping out the budget all over again and that they would start voting against what's currently being discussed. Is that a threat right now, or is it going to actually do something to try and lower some of that spending and at least come up with a semi-decent plan for a bill coming out of the House? Now, the Senate's obviously a different battle, but do you think the final bill, from what you've heard, may be a semi-decent one out of the House of Representatives?
Well, it depends on your definition of semi-decent. I mean, the problem is, you know, like I said, the federal government is borrowing $1 out of $5 it spends, and that's roughly equivalent to $1.5 trillion.
Yeah.
So we're not going to be able to solve it on any one year.
Right.
But the House Freedom Caucus folks are out there talking about, in this letter that some of them crafted and sent to Speaker McCarthy, is a good stake in the ground that we've got to start addressing how much we're spending more than what we have coming in as revenue, and it's going to take several years to get into that, to get back to where we need to be, but we've actually got to start to work, and I'm I'm happy that we're starting that discussion. There's even a bipartisan group of some Democrats and Republicans that we call ourselves the Bipartisan Fiscal Forum, but we're at least starting to talk about it. It's a long road to go to figure out how do we fix it. But the discussion has to start, and we've got to start, and now's as better good a time as any. I mean, 10 years would have been a better time, but now's as good a time as any to actually at least start the process.
We got to start somewhere. We can't go down halfway down the road unless we actually start that journey from the beginning. We're talking with Congressman Ron Estes from the 4th District here in the state of Kansas, my congressman in the great state of Kansas. Let's talk about the economy for a second as a whole. We see the Biden administration out there on the campaign trail running campaign ads all over the country. Now that he's announced that he's also sinking in $25 million into TV ads in some pretty big swing states, including Wisconsin, where we're seeing the presidential debate this week as well for the Republican side, talking about how great the economy is with this 13 million jobs that's added and how inflation's come down and how wonderful things are. And why in the world do I see such low poll ratings and approval ratings for my economy when I've solved the issue and I've been the Gandalf riding on his great white horse coming in to save the day? Congressman, I think that people are a bit smarter than that, aren't they? Because gas prices are over $4 right now. Mortgage rates just hit over 7% across the nation, which is going to kill the real estate market, or at least damage it pretty decently right now. We didn't create 13 million jobs. And oh, by the way, we're floating between 15 to 20% inflation overall for the past 3 years under the Biden administration.
Yeah, but I mean, President Biden's cherry-picking numbers to make himself look good. I mean, he takes credit for all the jobs that were recovered back out of COVID, even though he had nothing to do with the vaccine being developed and the economy getting back open after all the shutdown around the pandemic. So he takes credit for all of those jobs that he didn't do anything to put people back to work. I mean, he cherry-picks the inflation numbers, and he says, well, just look at this one month's number, and, you know, it's down a whole lot more from what the one number was a year ago. But what he doesn't tell you is that since he's been in office, inflation costs have gone up over 16% on average, on everything from groceries to gas to your rent and car payments, and that's the equivalent of 2 months' pay. So literally everybody's lost 2 months' pay to buy the same groceries, the same gas, and that's just since he's been in office in the last 2.5 years. Gasoline prices are up even more than that. I mean, they're up 34% since he came into office. He tries to blame Putin for that, but if you look at what the gas prices were, they were up as high before Putin invaded, and now they've come back down from Putin's invasion. And they're still high because of President Biden and his attack on fossil fuel and America having a strong energy policy. And so people are feeling the pinch. They're feeling how much it costs to buy back to school clothes and supplies, to buy groceries and feed their family. We're seeing it with interest rates. You know, you can't buy a house now because of the interest rates have gotten so high. You know, your monthly mortgage payments are double from what they were a year and a half ago. And it's all because of Biden economics and the things that he's causing, the high prices and taking money out of people's pocketbooks.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. I mean, food is ridiculous. Like you said, gas prices are ridiculous. And I heard last week, which we had to laugh at a little bit, because they tried to blame the high gas prices for it being too hot and workers not wanting to go and actually drill for it and be outside because it was too hot. So it wasn't Biden again by emptying and depleting the oil reserves across the nation or trying to be energy independent again. No, it's because of the workers, and they didn't want to go out in the heat to actually go and drill for the oil. So it's our fault, apparently, Congressman.
Well, he's wrong on that. I just spent some time talking to some of the oil and gas folks, and they're chomping at the bit to get back to having strong energy policies for America so that we can keep our country strong again. And President Biden and his administration's hampering that.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. At the same time, as we talk about the inflation right now, the Biden administration says that it's down to around, I don't know, 3%, 4%, whatever they say it was. But I don't see it, Congressman. I haven't seen a 20% increase on my pay raise. Most people have not seen a pay raise of near 20% as well. This is not going to bode well for them. And I think that the polls are showing that because he's under 40% right now. So I think people are waking up to this.
They really are. And he cherry picks that it's 3% over the last year, which means it's 3% on top of the 9% the year before and the 3.5% the year before that. So he tries to make it sound like inflation's going down, but in reality, it's still continuing to increase. Yeah. So people are feeling that pain of continuing increasing prices and having to deal with that, whereas he's trying to make it sound like it's good because they're not increasing as fast. They're still increasing.
Yeah, they are. How much has the actual Inflation Reduction Act been part of this conversation? I know he admitted openly on the campaign trail now that the Inflation Reduction Act really wasn't about reducing inflation, was about essentially being a Green New Deal to try and promote environmental policy and trying to essentially change the entire nation and how we operate under the electric grid. Is this having any impact on what's going on with the economy right now as well?
It really is. And, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act name of a bill was probably one of the most misleading statements out of the Biden administration, was that they were going to reduce inflation. In fact, the Congressional Budget Office, when the bill was passed, said it's going to have an increase in inflation impact on that. And as President Biden, admitted this month that he shouldn't have called it that, and he's right, it shouldn't have been. It was a increase in spending, and between the Inflation Act, between the Infrastructure Act, between the ARPA, all they've done is increase spending over the last 2.5 years, and now we're paying the price for it. We're seeing it in higher interest rates. We're seeing it in higher prices through inflation, and it's the burden because of all the federal spending, and that's why our debt keeps going up because of all of this excess spending.
Yeah, amen to that. We're talking with Congressman Ron Estes from the 4th District for the state of Kansas. I know you have to run here, so last question for you, and I appreciate it. And I know you're not on the Ag Committee in Washington, D.C., but the other major issue that is a focal point when you guys return back over the next couple of weeks is, of course, the Farm Bill of 2023 for the farmers, or at least it should be for the farmers. Really, 80% of that funding goes towards SNAP and some of the food stamp programs in the nation, which is another conversation we'll need some more time for. But I've heard as well that that one may not be done in the appropriate amount of time. What have you heard on the Farm Bill? And is that something, again, where we could have a semi-decent bill coming out of the House of Representatives?
Yeah, the Farm Bill, as you said, probably misnamed as well. It should be the food stamp and Farm Bill, because 80% of it is food stamp pricing and spending. And so, you know, that's one of the things that we reauthorize that every 5 years as a program, and it expires September 30th. There's a lot of great work being done by the House Agriculture Committee and some work done on the Senate side as well to pass that through. We hopefully it'll get done by the end of September. You know, with all of the appropriations discussion, it may start to crowd out a little bit of the food stamp and Farm Bill discussion. We could do, if it does, we could do a 1 year extension of the Farm Bill to because the program works, and that's something that we want to keep going. But there's several things that are at risk of being crowded out a little bit in December or in September when we're talking about appropriations. The FAA reauthorization as well has to be done in September. But I think in terms of the discussion and the work that's been going on the food stamp and Farm Bill, there's a lot of good pieces in that. I mean, crop insurance is one of those important programs that actually supports and provides that safety net for farmers and making sure that we maintain and ideally increase the work requirement provisions for food stamp programs so that we actually can help get more people back to work and help with the economy growing.
Yeah, amen to that. A lot of things to address when you guys get back up there. I know it's always a battle to start off that fall session again, and hopefully we can see some changes with conservatives really making some ground and getting us back on track, especially like we've talked about so much on the economic side of it. It's Congressman Ron Estes from the 4th District of the state of Kansas here on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker Hotlines on the Todd Starnes Radio Program. Congressman, thank you so much again for all your time. Keep up the fight. Keep up what you're doing. It's awesome to have you, especially up there on the Ways and Means Committee. Let's get an update from you again real soon.
All right, great. Thank you, Andy.
All right, there he goes. That's Congressman Ron Estes from the 4th District of Kansas, right back here on the Todd Starnes Radio Program.
Attention, your withdrawal has been denied by the U.S. government.
Picture a world where your every purchase is monitored, tracked, and controlled by those in power to suppress the freedoms of those they see fit. Hi, my name is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and New York Times bestselling author. And right now, I've become very focused on the impending rollout of the central bank digital currency. This is not a work of fiction. It's a terrifying reality looming on the horizon. But there is a bit of good news. I've partnered with Advantage Gold to offer you a solution. They are specialists in converting your traditional assets, like those inside an IRA or 401k, into tangible assets such as physical gold and silver. Don't allow your money to be controlled. Claim your free gold protection kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Welcome back into it. It is the Todd Starnes Radio Program. Hey, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, Mike Lindell with MyPillow is now launching their MyPillow 2.0, which is kind of awesome. When Mike invented the MyPillow, it had everything that you could ever ask for in a pillow. And now, nearly 20 years after he discovered this awesome technology, he makes it even better, which I don't know how this guy continues to do it. The MyPillow 2.0 has the patented adjustable fill on the original MyPillow, and now with a brand new fabric that is made with a temperature regulating thread. The MyPillow 2.0 is the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever own. For the exclusive offer right here for Todd Starnes Radio Program listeners, the MyPillow 2.0 is buy one, get one free with the promo code STARNES. MyPillow 2.0 temperature regulating technology is 100% made in the U.S. of A and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com and click the radio listener square to buy the to get the buy one, get one free offer. Enter promo code STARNES, or you can also call 800-839-8506 to get your MyPillow 2.0 right now. It's MyPillow right here on Todd Starnes. All right, we have some calls on the line. Don't go anywhere. It's open lines to you when we come back for hour number three. We have a lot more to get to as we get ready for the debate tomorrow and legislative session for the fall in Washington, D.C. So much to cover, and it's all right here on the Todd Starnes radio program.
Attention, your withdrawal has been denied by the U.S. government.
Picture a world where your every purchase is monitored, tracked, and controlled by those in power to suppress the freedoms of those they see fit. Hi, my name is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and New York Times bestselling author. And right now, I've become very focused on the impending rollout of the central bank digital currency. This is not a work of fiction. It's a terrifying reality looming on the horizon. But there is a bit of good news. I've partnered with Advantage Gold to offer you a solution. They are specialists in converting your traditional assets, like those inside an IRA or 401k, into tangible assets such as physical gold and silver. Don't allow your money to be controlled. Claim your free gold protection kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Welcome into it. It is the Todd Starnes radio program. What's up? It's hour number three. Always great to have you along for the ride. Andy Hoosier filling in for the great Todd Starnes here on the Todd Starnes radio program. 844-747-8868 if you want to jump in to the program, as we have moved at the Liberty University studios for a day out to Wichita, Kansas, is where I hail from, and it's great to have you along for the ride today. Coming up bottom of this hour, we have we're going to continue our trend of talking about what's going to happen in D.C. when Congress returns back for the fall session. We'll have U.S. Senator James Lankford on the program to talk about what's going on in the great state of Oklahoma and the budgetary issues as well. More on the farm bill, which is, those of you that don't know exactly what the farm bill is, we'll break that down here in just a little bit. So much to talk about, as we've still had the ongoing conversation about the GOP debate that is set for tomorrow, the eight candidates setting the stage in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and your thoughts on whether Trump should be there or not. Also, as we talked about with the congressman in the last hour regarding the federal budget and taxes and the appropriations process, real quickly, and we have some calls on the line, so I don't want to wait, have you wait too much longer, but I do want to kind of set the stage here for you for just a moment. For those that don't know this process, And for those of you that may know a little bit about me, I am a dork. I love talking about the finances and the budget and the taxes. I enjoy that conversation. When I first got into radio, I studied under a guy that was in radio who, before his radio career, used to run the finance department for the Pentagon. And he had federal budgets from like 50 years that he had put into an Excel sheet every single year to show the increase in every category, every budget department, every agency, where money was going from defense to social programs. And he gave me a copy of it. I still cherish that very much so. And that's what really sparked my interest, because I was not a money guy or a numbers guy prior to that. So it really opened my eyes on to where money actually goes, because what we hear from the mainstream media, what we hear from most politicians, is, shocker, an absolute lie. So when we talk about, when we talk about the federal budget, we have to put things into perspective here. And we have not, and I want to be very clear, we have not had an actual federal budget since before the Barack Obama administration. Hasn't happened since then. Before, we used to have the 12 appropriations bills. Now, before we even go to that, I'd like to remind you as well, we have two separate portions of the budget. We have discretionary spending and we have mandatory spending. The federal budget is split into two categories. The mandatory spending is really the most troublesome. It is every social program from Medicare and Medicaid to Social Security to the SNAP program and others that essentially take care of the quote-unquote general welfare of the citizens, which we don't have that. I know we have a general welfare clause. That's not what these were intended for. So if you want to look at it constitutionally, those aren't even supposed to really be there. But we've kind of worked our way down this road of socialism and the government taking care of us for a long time, and now they're too big to go away. And in fact, they're so big, they fall into the mandatory category of the federal budget. What does that mean? It means that's the portion of the budget that you're not allowed to touch. You can't discuss. When we talk about the appropriations bills, when we talk about passing another federal budget, it does not include that. That is on autopilot. And it grows anywhere between to a 4% increase every single year, and you're not allowed to touch those social programs. In fact, when Republicans say, let's just slow the growth of it, let's have it grow by 2% this year instead of a 6% growth this year, they say that that's a cut and that people are going to die in the streets unless we do something different. Oh, yeah, we're not even allowed to just grow it at a slower rate than what it's actually growing. That's the mandatory side. We don't even talk about that. That's 60% of the budget. So when you hear Democrats be like, oh, we're spending all this money on the military, that's not true, because, no, the military and defense spending is not the majority of our budget. It's the majority of discretionary spending, but it's not the mandatory spending of the federal budget. Kind of messed up priorities there, isn't it? So the 60% of the budget is the mandatory. It's set aside, grows automatically on its own. We can't touch that. The discretionary is what we discuss with the 12 appropriations, all the agencies, all the departments, the farm bill, and then the budget as a whole when we have these 12 different appropriations processes. And that portion we have not actually passed as a legitimate federal budget since the Barack Obama times, because now we do the omnibus package. We do the extension, the continuing resolution that they call it, that starts in October when our budget runs out until December. Then when you're in holiday mode, then we go into that and we say, well, we could either extend it again until like February, or we could just pass it as a massive omnibus bill, do the Nancy Pelosi mindset. We got to pass it to see what's in it. And then the history is there. And we see that every single year. Now for this budget, I want to put things into another bit of perspective for you. This budget, if you remember in June when we passed the debt ceiling bill that was only supposed to get us to fund our debts for the next 3 months before we ran out of our budget, we ended up increasing the debt by $4 trillion over the next 4 years, for 2 years. So it's $2 trillion per year for the next 2 years, totaling $4 trillion, which, if I remember correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, isn't that the amount of money that we spent solely on COVID-19 recovery during 2020, 2021, when we passed that massive stimulus, the PPPs and the one-time paychecks and the universal basic income, the child tax credits. Isn't that what we spent was near $2 trillion on COVID-19 alone. And then when we didn't spend that the next year, the Biden administration came out and said, well, guess what? We cut the deficit. We didn't spend nearly as much money. Look at that. We're cutting government spending, even though it was only a one-time spending plan for the $2 trillion for the COVID-19. We cut it, and now we don't have to worry about it. Look at all the money that we saved because I'm president, and we didn't spend another $2 trillion COVID-19 stimulus package across the nation. Now, our new budget proposal, now that we've increased it by $2 trillion for the next 2 years up to $4 trillion, this budget proposal that we're discussing is less than 1% different than what we had seen when we did a COVID-19 stimulus package. Oh, yes. That's how much money we're wanting to increase. And again, Democrats, big government types, are like, well, obviously we have this money available. And I use that in air quotes for our radio listeners here. Well, we have this money available. We have to cap it out. We got to spend all of that new $2 trillion. Not let's just try and keep the budget where it's at, and then we have $2 trillion as a give in case something crazy happens again. No, no. We need to cap that whole $2 trillion out to spend up to the level that we did when we did a one-time $2 trillion stimulus payment for the country under COVID because we had to shut down the entire economy. That's the level our new norm and spending would actually be. And while they're doing that, and we get ready for a Republican presidential debate coming up tomorrow with 8 candidates taking the stage, Joe Biden launches a $25 million campaign ad talking about how great the economy is.
Too many people have been left behind and treated like they're invisible. Folks, my economic plan is about investing in places and people that have been forgotten. It's about making things here in America again. It's about good jobs. It's about the dignity of work. And it's about damn time we're doing it.
Joe Biden is determined to reward hard work. That's why he passed historic laws that rebuild our roads and bridges, invest in our factories, and bring back American manufacturing. Over 12 million jobs have been created, and Joe Biden's building an economy that leaves no city, no town, no American behind.
We're investing in places and people that have been forgotten. They've been invisible. But we haven't forgotten. We're building an economy from the bottom up and the middle out, where no one's going to be left behind.
Joe Biden, a president for all Americans.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Wow. All right, there's the campaign ad. Now, again, still running the 13 million jobs created. And oh, look how great the economy is with my massively high 20% inflation over the past 3 years. The lies are nonstop while we're continuously spending more and more and more. And I think it's going to pinch the paychecks for most people even more so than what we're seeing right now at a 20% inflation over the past 3 years, over a $4 gallons of gas as an average across the nation. And eventually, we can't sustain this any longer. What the heck are they up to as they try to brainwash us into thinking we're actually doing well in this nation? 844-747-8868. Let's jump on the lines here. Victor, I know you've been holding on for a while. I appreciate you hanging out with us from Maryland. Victor, how are you, my friend?
I am doing okay. And I do have a Wichita connection. I'm a avid DXer. I like to hunt for distant radio and TV stations.
Ooh.
And during the skip season, I used to get Channel 3 in Wichita quite a few times.
Fantastic. It's a wonderful area. Maybe you'll pick up our local station around here and hear this program all over again.
Yes. If the Biden administration gets their way, they're going to figure out a way to shut the country down. It's either going to be another COVID episode where you have to wear a mask and get the vaccine and be restricted where you can and cannot go, or they'll declare a climate change emergency and shut the country down that way. I just want your audience to understand that and be prepared if they try to pull something like this. They're doing trial balloons now to figure out which way they can shut the country down so they can cancel the 2024 election.
Victor, you bring up an interesting point. I don't know if you've seen the headlines just today, but it sounds like they're already testing the waters for another potential lockdown as they talk about this new variant of the COVID-19 virus, where universities are already starting to implement a mask mandate. Again, health departments in California and other states are already advocating for the mask mandate and for isolation and for you to go back home and work remotely. Again, they're already trying it. I'm with you. I thought they would wait, if they were going to do this again, put the tinfoil hat on for a second. I thought they would wait and do this next fall leading into the election, but maybe they're testing the waters, dropping the breadcrumbs right now and seeing how it plays out. I don't know how popular this is going to be and whether people actually go along with it again, because I would think that after the 2 years of disaster during COVID, we've woken up and like, wow, we realized the masks really didn't do a whole lot. Wow, the isolation didn't really do a whole lot, because guess what? It's an airborne virus, which means you could actually be breathing it in without anybody around you. And then you get the people that are like wearing masks in their vehicles with the windows rolled up and looking very silly and ridiculous for themselves. So I thought that they would hold off on this, but we'll see whether people go along with it again.
It's another way to control the population and go back to mail-in ballots. That's what they're interested in, because they cannot cheat if people vote in person. That's the whole idea behind this.
Yeah, I agree. Victor, I appreciate the call very much, my friend. Yeah, and Republicans are starting, it seems like, are starting to transition their mindset a little bit on this issue by focusing on saying, hey, if we can't get rid of early voting, we need to be a part of this. If we can't get rid of drop boxes, we need to be part of this and actually be ahead of the game, as opposed to being the resistors and fighting against it, which I think is needed. Now, what we do need is some relatively decent election laws, and not to toot our horn here in the state of Kansas, but I am familiar with election laws here in the state of Kansas where I'm from with my radio station, but as good friends with our Secretary of State, there are many states, including the state of Georgia, where after the 2020 election, they based a lot of their election reform laws on what we do here in Kansas. And we do have drop boxes, but we have some very secure drop boxes, and I am very happy with the way that we run elections here in Kansas, where we have some verification. We have signature verifications, we have address verifications, we have a lot of different steps to where even if someone tried to pull shenanigans with dumping in a whole bunch of envelopes into a drop box, that most of them would get shot down. In fact, we had an individual pay massive amounts of money to do a recall vote and a recount in our districts, one of the more popular ones, and it came back with only like 6 ballots being miscounted. 6 out of like the multiple tens of thousands of them. So I am relatively happy with the way elections are done here. And if we are going to do this process, then we need to step up the game and actually have a legitimate process to make sure that it's secure. And if we can't get rid of drop boxes, we make sure that process is secure. If we can't get rid of early voting, then we make sure that process is secure and Republicans get on board with it, opening up more of that opportunity. For me personally, I'd like to see the election holiday shut down businesses for a day and make everybody go and vote on a one particular singular day and not actually have a 3-day grace period for mail-in ballots, because I think that's where it opens up a lot of the door for the malarkey, as Joe Biden likes to say. But you're right. Interesting point, my friend, and I appreciate it. 844-747-8868. Let's go ahead and take a break. We got lots more to get to. Plus, U.S. Senator James Lankford from the state of Oklahoma will be joining us after the bottom of the hour as well. This is the Todd Starnes radio program.
Attention, your withdrawal has been denied by the U.S. government.
Picture a world where your every purchase is monitored, tracked, and controlled by those in power to suppress the freedoms of those they see fit. Hi, my name is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and New York Times bestselling author. And right now, I've become very focused on the impending rollout of the central bank digital currency. This is not a work of fiction. It's a terrifying reality looming on the horizon. But there is a bit of good news. I've partnered with Advantage Gold to offer you a solution. They are specialists in converting your traditional assets, like those inside an IRA or 401k, into tangible assets such as physical gold and silver. Don't allow your money to be controlled. Claim your free gold protection kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
It is. Welcome back into it. Todd Starnes radio program. Andy Hoosier filling in. By the way, you can always find Todd Starnes on his website at toddstarnes.com. You can also find his social media at Todd Starnes as well. You can find my social media, which I appreciate it when you check me out as well. You can check me out all you want to, at Hoosier Reason on my handle. That's no I in Hoosier, H-O-O-S-E-R Reason on the social media, and also the website at HoosierReason.com. As well. Hey, I want to tell you about Todd's friends over at Patriot Mobile. As you know, now more than ever, it's important to support companies and organizations that share our values. Can be challenging at times, but it is available. And Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless network. Not only do they share our beliefs, but they actually do something about it as well, as Patriot Mobile donates a portion of every dollar to organizations that fight for causes that you and I actually care about. Right now, switch to Patriot Mobile and use promo code Todd, T-O-D-D, to get a free activation and free gift. Patriot Mobile has the broadest nationwide coverage and uses the same towers that other carriers use. They have plans to fit any budget, along with great discounts for veterans and first responder heroes, as well as the multi-line users. Switching to Patriot Mobile is easy. Just go to patriotmobile.com/Todd, or you can call their U.S.-based customer service team at 972-PATRIOT. Get your special discount and free premier activation by using promo code Todd. For more details, go to online to patriotmobile.com/Todd. That's patriotmobile.com/Todd, or call 972-PATRIOT. That's 972-PATRIOT. All right, give us a call here on the Todd Starnes radio program at 844-747-8868 as we continue our conversation. Imagine, if you will, a job, and I love to use this analogy. Imagine you're an office worker, for example, or a construction worker. It's hot outside, so we'll give some shout out to the construction workers and everybody working outside. It's hot, at least here in Kansas where I'm at. It's, what is it right now? 102 degrees. Thank you very much. So let's give a shout out to those that are working outside for a second, shall we? Let's say you're a construction worker and you have to, I don't know, pave the road, which is a ridiculously hot thing to do on a really hot day. And I feel really bad for those that are trying to do that. And you tell your boss, you're like, hey, the deadline is 3 days from now. Let's say it's on Friday. By the end of the week, we have to have this project done. And you get close to Friday, Thursday afternoon. The boss is like, hey, how are things going, man? The deadline, got to open up the road. Cars are waiting. There's getting some frustrated drivers around the area here with doing the detours. We got to get this road opened up. Well, didn't get it done. Didn't. Well, why not? Well, we couldn't remember the ratio for mixing the asphalt in order to get it on the ground. We need an extension. All right, you're going to get a one-week extension. No, we need a three-month extension. Wait, what? A three-month extension? What are you talking about? We do the 3 months, then they're like, well, we didn't quite get it done. So can we just like pack down the dirt and just let people drive on it because we still didn't get it done? So we're going to do some type of continuing resolution here. We're just going to extend it. Just go ahead and do the dirt road, and then we won't pave it. We'll pave it next year. We'll look at the project for next year. Don't worry about it. It was your one job, but we couldn't get it done. That's the efficiency, or the lack thereof efficiency, from Congress and our federal government when we don't pass a federal budget. When we don't actually go through the budgetary process like we're supposed to. We'll talk some more about that right around the corner with U.S. Senator James Lankford from the great state of Oklahoma. Back after this, Andy Hoosier filling in for the Todd Starnes radio program. Stay here.
Attention, your withdrawal has been denied by the U.S. government.
Picture a world where your every purchase is monitored, tracked, and controlled by those in power to suppress the freedoms of those they see fit. Hi, my name is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and New York Times bestselling author. And right now, I've become very focused on the impending rollout of the central bank digital currency. This is not a work of fiction. It's a terrifying reality looming on the horizon. But there is a bit of good news. I've partnered with Advantage Gold to offer you a solution. They are specialists in converting your traditional assets, like those inside an IRA or 401k, into tangible assets such as physical gold and silver. Don't allow your money to be controlled. Claim your free gold protection kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Welcome back into it. It is the Todd Starnes radio program. Andy Hoosier filling in for the great Todd Starnes. Moving the Liberty University studios out here to Wichita, Kansas. And it's great to have you along for the ride with us today. Really happy to have this next guest on the program. Don't want to waste any time as we go back to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker Hotlines here on the Todd Starnes radio program. He's a great friend. I've had him on the program many, many times before. As Congress is headed back to Washington, D.C. to begin and ensue the shenanigans that go on in Washington, D.C. for the fall session of Congress. Excited to have on the program from the great state of Oklahoma, it's U.S. Senator James Lankford. Senator, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, actually. Thank you. In the great state of Oklahoma right now, it helps my whole attitude.
Yeah, I love it. I can only imagine being out of D.C. It's kind of a nice break. I know you guys are about ready to head back up there, and you've been traveling quite a bit, and there's a lot of things to talk about, especially for what you guys are going to focus on when you do get back to D.C., but to talk about the state of Oklahoma, what's been going on out there, and some of the big wins you've been working on.
Yeah, a lot of things that are happening still in the state. The economy is still continuing to be able to grow, and a lot of things are happening here that are positive. A lot of aerospace moving into the state, a lot of energy policy or energy companies that are still continuing to advance in all forms of energy. So that's been helpful. But right now, it's been interesting just traveling around the state, hearing people talk about struggling to get their passports and still people being able to travel, can't get the State Department to be able to do their tasks. Lots of frustration on regulations that are coming down on small business, medium and large sized businesses. Biden administration just trying to just make up things as they go. And people are excited that the price of eggs is down, but they're not excited the price of gas is up and the price of mortgages are up. So this economy and the Bidenomics that President Biden seems to be so excited about, I can't find a lot of people in Oklahoma that are excited about.
Yeah, I can't imagine them traveling around the country saying that Bidenomics is working. And while they lie about 13 million jobs being created, they lie about inflation being down. We're battling near 20% inflation over the past 3 years combined under the Biden administration. Gas yep. up over $4 a gallon almost in many places right now. I don't know how they can continue to try and say that there's a positive light in the economy.
Yeah, I just can't either. I mean, yesterday we hit the highest mortgage rates that we've had in 20 years. That is solely connected to the Biden economic policy. So it's making it harder for small businesses to get loans, harder for individuals to get home loans, credit card debt, and that interest is going up significantly. The price of gasoline and the increase in gasoline right now is directly attached to the Inflation Reduction Act that they passed and some of the policies they put in there, which increased the price of the taxes on all of these different energy companies. And they basically punished energy companies for producing oil and gas, which drives up the price, which increases it for consumers. And they're saying, why am I getting gouged? They're actually getting gouged by Bidenomics is what they're getting gouged by.
What's really unfortunate, Senator, is it sounds like when you guys come back up there, one of the major priorities that we'll be focused on is, of course, the federal budget that ends at the end of September. And it seems like already we're talking about just a short-term funding plan to get us through the end of the year in December, which has been kind of the consistent pattern that we've seen over the past few years. Is that true, or could we actually see a budget come out when it's supposed to be?
No way. I would tell you that just because Chuck Schumer has not put a single appropriation bill on the floor, even for a vote. We have 12 of those bills that have to be done by the end of the fiscal year. We have 3 weeks in September that we're in session, and he's not put a single one of them on the floor. So I don't anticipate we can get through 12 of those in September. And so I would anticipate a short-term, what's called a continuing resolution, to be able to keep spending the same level. The fight's going to be on the White House already coming out and saying, hey, we want to do some new things on the border that we want you to give us funding for. And literally the language the Biden White House is looking for, that the Homeland Security Secretary can spend this money on anything that they see necessary along the border. I was like, there is absolutely zero chance that we're going to support just handling Mayorkas a blank check and saying, here's billions of dollars you can spend on whatever you want to on that.
Yeah.
So there's some issues that are already arising that could slow down just a continuing resolution, even for some of the money they're looking for in other areas.
Wow. It seems like it's going to be another frustrating process. I know you and I have talked about this quite a bit before about Republicans putting our foot on, not allowing just the massive amount of spending that's coming out. So we'll have to talk about that again as that conversation moves on. At the same time, you mentioned the border. I know you went and traveled to go see the border just a few months ago, and we're still seeing the flood of migrants coming in, to the point where even New York City and Mayor Eric Adams is like, yeah, can we start enforcing the border in some way, shape, or form here? I mean, this is when progressive liberals are starting to raise the red flag and the warning sign here. That should be a sign, shouldn't it?
Yeah, you would think that it would be. Actually, I'm at the border pretty frequently and back and forth with Border Patrol and some of the issues that they face there trying to be able to resolve some things. This can be resolved a couple of ways. One is administratively. This administration just enforcing current law. If they would just enforce current law. We as Americans are not opposed to legal immigration. We're opposed to illegal immigration. So just enforce current law. Second thing is Congress does need to redefine what the word asylum means. This is the loophole that this administration is using to be able to open the border up. It's just to basically say anyone who crosses the border will give them the opportunity to be able to pursue asylum, knowing full well the vast majority of those, 90%+, would not qualify even for the most minimum threshold of an asylum request. But they're just saying, come into the country, will set you up with an asylum hearing in the next 5 to 10 years from now. And by that time, they're gone. They've disappeared into society. So this is just a welcome mat that this administration's put out for this. So if Congress can clarify what the word asylum means so that this administration can't abuse it, that would be a significant change for us.
Well, that would be a big one. And correct me if I'm wrong, Senator, but I thought originally that at least the general assumption of an asylum seeker was that you had to be only from a neighboring nation for you to be knocking on the door and saying, I need to get out of the current country that I'm in because of being oppressed or being persecuted in some way, shape, or form. I'm going to go across this border here and they're going to protect me, not from halfway around the world to say, well, I'm an asylum seeker and I've made it all the way across the world to come to the United States and now I'm going to claim asylum. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me.
That's correct. And that's exactly what the international definition is. If you were from, let's say, Guatemala, and you're going to go to Canada and say, I want to request asylum in Canada. As soon as you cross the border in Canada, they would ask you, did you cross from the United States? Did you go through Mexico? Did you request asylum in those locations? They are closer to your home. Did you request there? When you say no, Canada will kick you out immediately and say, you can't come through three other countries and then request asylum. You've got to do that in the next closest place. That's Canadian law right now. It's been that way for more than 2 decades. The United States has been slow to respond to this, but no president has abused that law like this president has. We didn't think we had to, but clearly we've got to be able to clarify that.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate we have to clarify, because if the law is already on the books, it should be a lock sealed case of, hey, you can't do this, right. But for some reason we're not.
Right, and so this is one that we need to be able to clarify and be able to work through the process. I'm actively reaching out to some Democrat senators, finding some that are open to this issue because they understand as well how much that they're having a problem with the most basic issue of they're becoming a party that encourages illegal activity. Yeah. And that is just a terrible place for them to be able to be. But currently the National Democrat Party is the Democrat Party of illegal activity, whether it be crime or whether it be illegal crossings of the border. That's where they are, because that's what they've encouraged and promoted.
It is unfortunate. We're talking with U.S. Senator James Lankford from the great state of Oklahoma. As you guys head back up there as well, I know before you left, before the recess here, you guys passed that national defense bill, which was a big one. And usually a pretty simple bipartisan bill to some degree, maybe a little bit of squabbling. But it seems like now we're getting so partisan in D.C. that it's getting harder just to pass even basic legislation right now. But talk about what that process going into that bill.
The process got crammed. That should have been a 3-week process. It's a really big bill. It got crammed into 2, and that made it more contentious than it should have been. It passed 89-11. That's a very, very bipartisan vote to be able to go through. It defines out a lot of national defense policy, not only what we're going to do, what we're not going to do. It's a pay raise for the members of the military and civilians that work in defense. But it also included some other areas. I had an amendment, for instance, in there dealing with border security that we were just talking about, because border security is national security. The Border Patrol right now, they can't work overtime and be paid overtime on that. They work a lot of overtime because of what's happening, but they're just not paid for it. So I actually had a section in it that increased the pay for our Border Patrol if they're working overtime. It should be pretty simple to be able to do that, but that's a logical thing to be able to do to keep those folks there. But we also had things for instance, spouses. We have members in the military that leave early. Very often they'll say the reason they left early is because their spouse couldn't get a career, and then their spouse wanted a career as well. So I put in an additional piece helping spouses be able to actually do remote work and other things to be able to, so they can have a career while their spouse, who's actually fighting in the military, they can have a career as well. So there are lots of things that we continue to be able to tweak. Most of them are not partisan on this. It boils down to how we're going to defend our nation.
Yeah, which is common sense. Again, the problem is that for some reason, they always like to focus on a lot of the social aspects. And I know you guys did include a lot of things regarding like being able to transfer outside of the state for abortions and some of these other things that were being funded by the government and the military that you wanted to take away. Again, common sense, but they didn't like that too much.
Oh, no, it's amazing to me. So the federal law already is in place to say that federal dollars cannot be used for an abortion. That is federal law right now. Has been federal law for a long time. The Biden administration, in its obsession to increase abortions in America, they didn't want to just have abortion access. They want to increase the numbers of abortions in America. They're now doing abortions at VA centers, which is clearly strictly against federal law, and they're now wanting to be able to pay people that are in the military 5 days of paid leave and their travel costs to be able to go get an abortion. Also, clearly against federal law. This will be an area of debate long term on it. This shouldn't be an issue because this is, does the administration have the responsibility to follow federal law or not? I would say yes, they have that responsibility. It's a basic function of the president. They've got to follow federal law. But currently, they're not doing that.
Wow. It is unfortunate. Last question for you. It's you, Senator James Lankford. I know you're busy, my friend, and I appreciate all your time very much. But when you guys do head back up there, two really of the major topics, of course, is going to be the federal budget and the farm bill that I know is still in the works as well. That one expires as well at the end of September going into the fourth quarter. But is there opportunity? Do you think the farm bill is going to be done in time that's going to affect the farmers, or is that one going to be delayed too?
Farm bill will definitely be delayed. In fact, I'll recently just talked to some of the leadership on the farm bill and some of the staff and the members that are working most closely with that. There's no way they're going to make it by the end of October.
Wow.
To be able to get that. So that's going to have a short-term extension as well. Some of that is that we've got new staff, new transition folks that are there that are just trying to get to speed to get it ready. Farm bill is also incredibly complicated, but quite frankly, it boils down to a couple of things that become the most complicated: sugar policy, dairy policy, and SNAP benefits. $1.5 trillion the farm bill, about $300 billion of that $1.5 trillion is actually farm policy. The rest of it's SNAP benefits. So $1.2 trillion of it is just SNAP benefits. And we are trying to do some fixes on SNAP. This is not a matter of helping out people that are in that transition in a hard moment. But right now, for instance, you could walk into a store and with your SNAP card, you could get Flamin' Hot Cheetos, but you can't get a rotisserie chicken.
Mm.
Well, that's dumb, okay? That's just bad policy on it, for just health policy, basically, on it. So we're trying to be able to do some fixes on that and to make sure that we're actually helping people that need help. And for folks that don't need the help, they're able to transition out of that program.
Yeah, there's a lot of problems with the SNAP program. And unfortunately, I don't even like SNAP being in the farm bill because, like you said,
with
how much it's supposed to go towards actual farmers with crop insurance and subsidies for the farmers when they have, their entire livelihood is out of their control based on the market prices and based on weather and everything else that goes on. And it should be focused on their SNAP and some of these other social programs that is a massive amount for the federal budget spending. Should go in other bills where we can actually focus on them specifically, shouldn't they?
Yeah, 100% agree with that. That's been a fight for me for years. There are actually people on both sides of the aisle that say, hey, it helps us to pass the farm bill if both of these things are together, because you've got some people fighting for SNAP and some people fighting for ag to be able to keep the two of them together. But what it really allows is that you can't really do either well because both of them end up being slammed together in a very large, very expensive bill.
It's unfortunate. Well, I know it's going to be two big ones when you guys get back, and you have your hands full when you return to Washington, D.C. again, and we always appreciate everything that you're doing. It's U.S. Senator James Lankford from the great state of Oklahoma. Keep up the fight, my friend. We appreciate it, and we'll chat again here real soon, brother.
You bet. Look forward to it.
All right. Thank you very much, my friend. That's, again, U.S. Senator James Lankford from the great state of Oklahoma. Let's take a break here right around the corner as we wrap up another hour of the Todd Starnes radio program. Stay here.
Attention. Your withdrawal has been denied by the U.S. government.
Picture a world where your every purchase is monitored, tracked, and controlled by those in power to suppress the freedoms of those they see fit. Hi, my name is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and New York Times bestselling author. And right now, I've become very focused on the impending rollout of the central bank digital currency. This is not a work of fiction. It's a terrifying reality looming on the horizon. But there is a bit of good news. I've partnered with Advantage Gold to offer you a solution. They are specialists in converting your traditional assets, like those inside an IRA or 401k, into tangible assets such as physical gold and silver. Don't allow your money to be controlled. Claim your free gold protection kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Back into it. It is the Todd Starnes Radio Show. Thanks for hanging out today. Andy Hoosier filling in for Todd. Todd will be back tomorrow, as you can hear him again. Again, he's traveling out today doing some journalism, doing his research, doing whatever he does. And oh, by the way, he is out as well accepting an award for KWAM, the Mighty 990, his flagship radio station out there in Memphis, Tennessee, winning the best local breaking news coverage for the state. That is amazing. Congrats, you guys all over there with the staff over at KUM. You guys are awesome, not only with this program, but then just with what you do on a daily basis. We appreciate it very, very much. Last few minutes, if you want to jump in here to the program, 844-747-8868 to jump on the Todd Starnes Show. We haven't talked about this on the program today. I know Todd will focus a lot of time on it here in the next day or so as well. But as Donald Trump says, he's not going to jump into the presidential debate tomorrow. He has announced, according to the Associated Press, and I love the picture and the headline and everything from the mainstream media, but the Associated Press just loving the fact that he has to go back to Georgia on Thursday, as he has announced that he will surrender himself on the Georgia charges tied to the efforts to overturn the 2020 election. That's the headline. That's not what we say here. That's the headline. Yeah. So if he's going to turn himself in, which I guess his bail is $200,000, he'll go there, he'll plead not guilty like he already has, he'll sign the paperwork, and he'll walk back out. Here's the crazy part. As he continues to get his fourth indictment and the media just going into their hysterics about how awesome it is to see Donald Trump fall and the pins beginning to fall under the Trump administration, his poll ratings continue to climb. And as we've talked about throughout the program with the debate on Wednesday, and most of you sounds like you don't want him to go and debate on Wednesday because we don't need to hear it, we have to admit that the mainstream media would focus so much attention on these indictments and the fact that he has to go directly from a debate on Wednesday night into Georgia to, quote-unquote, surrender himself for the charges that are being drawn up on him in the state. Now, remember how the scenario was when these were presented to him just a week or so ago, when they uploaded it onto the website early and they shouldn't have, and then they took it down and then they put it back up, and they're like, well, we're only human, we always make mistakes, it's totally okay, but Donald Trump's the most evil, horrible person on the face of the earth, and therefore we still need to go after him. Everything has been a charade. Everything's been hilarious to watch, but it's been orchestrated perfectly for them to keep him in the limelight. Which begs the question, what else is going on right now? What are they not telling us in the mainstream? What are they not telling us in the news? As Joe Biden tries to boost his approvals by dumping that $25 million into a campaign run, as Donald Trump is all over plastered in the news saying that he needs to go and surrender himself on Thursday in the state of Georgia, and as they say that Donald Trump's not attending that debate, what is really going on in the world right now that we're not privy to, that we're not focused on, that we're not aware of? Because to me, that's probably the most important story of the day. And that probably has to do with homelessness rising dramatically, crime rates going up right now, all of them running within Democrat states and Democrat cities, and candidates that are looking to try and replace Joe Biden because of the shenanigans that may be happening with his son, Hunter Biden. They're trying to keep those bits of information on the down low, swipe them under the rug. Remember, these aren't the droids you're looking for. And they do it very well, and we fall for it each and every time. That does it for us today. This is the Todd Starnes Radio Show. We'll see you on the radio.
We're proud to announce our brand new ACLJ Life and Liberty Drive. Our legal teams will be focusing on the issues that you, our ACLJ members, have told us matter the most to you, life and religious liberty. Join the ACLJ in the fight to keep America free.